said, quote, they wanted me to come in, be myself, bring the joy back to football for guys who weren't having as much fun. It's funny because you've made this environment for me very stressful up here in the booth, so I understand where he's coming from.
Do you feel it?
No.
Feel the stress? No. Well, I was going to say, I thought stressful was not having Super Bowl rings. So there was a mindset of a champion that I took to work every day. This wasn't daycare. If I wanted to have fun, I was going to go to Disneyland with my kids.
Mully and Haw, that is the voice of the great man himself, Tom Brady. He is now an NFL owner of 5% stake. So his partner is a guy named Tom Wagner. They purchased 10% of the Raiders. His partner is a guy. He is the founder of Knighthead Capital.
Mm-hmm.
And together they spent $220 million for their share of the Raiders, which at the time they agreed to this price was the price of the Raiders was $3.5 billion. That was the evaluation. And now we're over a year later, and it's like a crazy, according to CNBC's 2024 NFL team valuations, the Raiders are the fifth most valuable franchise in the league right now, with a value of $7.8 billion. They spent $220 million to get 10% of $7.8 billion. And it's like, it's crazy. They already got like a 50% break. Usually if you buy a 10% interest, yeah, and you have no pathway to ownership and that's it, and you don't have any say on anything you're doing, although Mark Davis said he wants Brady to help him find the next quarterback.
Well,
that would be 20%.
A lot of math there.
This is more than 50%.
A lot of math. He's going to have a prominent voice, according to the Las Vegas Review-Journal.
Yes.
And regardless of how much he owns or what stake he has, if he's going to have a prominent voice, you can imagine that happening. You can envision him being involved in the evaluation of next year's quarterback draft class, for instance. Can you see that?
Oh, I could mean, you see that? He's going to try to find them a quarterback.
How about an offensive coordinator? Could you envision that?
Sure.
How about director of football operations? Could you see that?
I think there's a lot of things he's going to be.
There's a lot of things
in
that represent inherent conflicts of interest when you're talking about the analyst that Fox is paying $37 million a year to call games and to go into other facilities to gather information so he's the best analyst he can be.
He can't do that.
No, he can't do
that. He's got a 10-year, $375 million deal.
I'd be lucky to see year two.
He could take that money and buy himself another 10%. No, he can't.
He could.
But he's got 5%
of
the team.
He could buy in more. He could invest more.
There's only so
much. He could buy the Sphere.
He could now afford the Sphere.
I mean, whatever. Just get out of the booth.
His $220 million. So let's say Tom spent $110 million to get his 5% of the team. That's actually worth what, 210? You see what I'm saying?
He's already
He's already doubled his money, all he had to do was just show up.
Right. He definitely has that effect.
Oh, by the way, he didn't go to the NFL owners' meetings because he was busy preparing.
He probably was busy preparing for his next broadcast by staying away from the facilities that he can't enter. And some people say on the text line, well, he can do it via Zoom.
Yes.
I don't know that he has access to these kinds of things.
I don't think he has Zoom. No.
He could buy Zoom.
Yes, he could probably get a piece of Zoom. David, it's what's really interesting to me is I said to you, he sounds like someone. And I want you to think about it the next time you listen to him, because he sounds to me like he's kind of growing into a Greg Olson type role. Like Greg Olson.
You're just trying to troll me now, aren't
No,
you?
I'm not trying to troll
okay.
you. I listened to Tom talking, and I'm like, who is that? Is that Greg Olson? And it was Tom Brady.
He could learn from worse.
Yes.
And I think that would be a good guy to mimic or copy.
Right.
And 847 texter asking me, why do you hate Tom so much? I don't hate Tom Brady. I respect and I really like Tom Brady, the player, always have after Deflategate. But I just have a problem with this whole setup because conflicts of interest bother me. I think they do tend to rankle journalists or ex-journalists or however you want to describe us, but I do think they tend to bother us more than other people. And this, for some reason, is one of those pebbles in my shoe. I just don't like the idea that he replaced somebody based on who was doing a good job and worked his way up. And it bothers me that he has done this now under these kind of circumstances that he's not even going to be able to do his job as well as he could possibly do his job because of these restrictions on him now. So that's all.
Well, I mean, and I'm
we
not
can go back
I'm,
to football.
I don't want to have a big argument about it, but I would say that Tom is, he's not just a football analyst. He's a personality. He is a guy that you hired not just so he could sit there and look at the game and talk, but because of, it's like when you see Bill Belichick holding court doing some stuff and he's all over the place. He is so good based on his understanding of things, not so much what that particular game is. In other words, Tom can break the game down differently by virtue of the fact that he played as many seasons as he did and won as many rings as he did, and his understanding of football as much as his knowledge of whatever the team is.
Think that supersedes any specific analysis that is necessary for each individual game?
Well, I think he can still do that without doing it through the conventional means of attending production meetings.
I think that underestimates the value that people get from gaining insight each and every game that they prepare for. I think that probably says that he can do as good of a job as the people who are in the trenches, so to speak, and going to these meetings and doing this research and being prepared for each individual game in the booth. I understand he's a personality and he's one of these rare situations, one of the greatest quarterback ever, all of the things that make him, you know, eligible for the cover of People magazine. But,
well, that's,
I don't know that.
There's no need to drag his divorce into this.
I'm not. I just, you know,
I'm just kidding.
I just don't think that he's in the best position to be the best analyst he can be. And as a football observer, watches a lot of games, I like for those analysts to give me something I don't know.
But I think Tom's the kind of guy who spent a lifetime working in the NFL, who knows how to watch tape and see what's happening, who can have insight into what a team is trying to do without having the coach tell him what they're trying to do. He can see it himself. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that there are less conventional ways to prepare for a broadcast than strictly going to a production meeting. And let's be honest about it. They've got tons of producers that are going to tell him everything. You know, he might not be able to tell you, well, when we talked to Pete, he said this would happen. But he can still say, from what I've seen of this team, blah, 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 right?
So I think the guy who was impeccably prepared for every NFL start he ever made is going to cut corners as a broadcaster.
No.
That's what you're saying.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying he's gonna prepare differently than other broadcasters do.
He will, and I will not like it.
Okay. That's fair.
I just won't like it. I'm surprised you're defending him to the extent that you are.
I'm not sure why
you're mesmerized by his eyes.
Well, I fell in love with Brenda by looking at her eyes. Oh no, that wasn't me. I never fell in love with Brenda. But that was interesting when you heard the breakdown of Caleb Williams and his eyes and how he was looking and surveying the field, and that is what Kurt Warner fell in love with as a player, the idea that he's looking at everything. And And then he talked about the eyes as the window to the soul and talked about falling in love with his wife. It was a beautiful moment.
847, people have rank. Brady has rank that other people don't. Life isn't fair. Fair enough. Fair.
Yeah. No, life
pun intended.
Life is definitely
Let's get
not
back
fair.
To football. Let's get back to – I want to ask you about the trades yesterday, because we touched on it on the pick six, but people might be waking up in their cars, whatever, and reacting to – Davante Adams to the Jets, Amari Cooper to the Bills, Cam Akers to the Vikings, lesser deal. But Roy Robertson-Harris a day earlier went from the Jaguars to the Seahawks. It seems like there's going to be an active trade market before the deadline in 3 weeks. Which team, the Jets or the Bills, got better yesterday?
Well, I mean, again, I think that it depends on how you view it. I think that, as I said during the pick six, I think Amari Cooper could be as good a player with the Bills as Devontae Adams will be with the Jets. I think that part of the problem with Devontae Adams is we're envisioning him playing with the quarterback the way they did in Green Bay. I don't think he's that player anymore, and I don't think the quarterback's that player anymore. I think that when we talk about the Bills, you got a guy that's at the height of his ability with a guy who is a solid, contributing 1,000-yard receiver who knows what it's like to go to different teams and make an immediate impact. So I think you're going to see a better receiver than they have with the Bills, and I think he is going to make an immediate impact, and it's going to be easier and more comfortable than forcing the ball to Devontae Adams.
I would agree with that. I think the Bills are going to be a team now that this was not a move necessarily to get better than the Jets or better than every team in the AFC East. To me, this feels like a move that was made with the playoffs in mind to make them better in January, because this division is there for the taking they're taking. And I think that when you add Amari Cooper, he essentially replaces Stephon Diggs. Josh Allen is playing at an MVP level. Yeah. He is coming off a 9-for-30 game, but he looks certainly like a guy that is dangerous again, playing through a concussion. Let's face it, he was coming out of concussion protocol. He was great on Monday night, and now he's got another weapon. That's a very dangerous team in the AFC with Amari Cooper.
I was surprised watching the last Jets game that Aaron Rodgers was getting hit as much as he was. Aaron Rodgers had done a pretty good job over the years of not getting hit, of not taking a lot of contact. He got sacked a couple times. There was one where it was a blindside sack and the guy cleaned him out. And I thought, oh boy, like, when's the last time Aaron Rodgers took a hit like that? It was almost like he's got a pretty good sense. He can still move a little bit. He still looks like Aaron Rodgers.
But I know what you mean. There's like a half tick slower in reaction time.
That's it.
And maybe that comes with age. I mean, we all can relate to that, right?
I wondered about that.
And he did look older at times, and I didn't know if it was him or the offensive line or a combination of both.
Yeah.
Might be a combination of both, because the line's pretty bad.
Yeah, the line's not good.
And the line's not doing him any favors. And you saw, was it Tyron Smith on a sweep? He was out to block a cornerback and whiffed badly. And it just reminded you just how bad the offensive line play can be in the NFL these days. And I think that everyone can relate to that. So Aaron Rodgers looks like a different quarterback. I don't know if Devontae Adams changes that as much as they will want it to change in New York. The Bills are good. And then I wonder what's going on in Cleveland, because when they start unloading assets, you wonder where that will stop. And I thought Myles Garrett, but you pointed out earlier an interesting thing. I want to go back. I'm going to do this tonight. I want to look at the Browns offensive linemen.
Yeah, there are a couple.
Because they're coming off a season that was very good in Cleveland. They've got some nice pieces there. And if they're getting out of this contract hell that Deshaun Watson has put them in, then maybe the salary cap situation, maybe they've got some offensive linemen that are worth taking a look at.
You know, I feel really bad for Stefanski, for some of the people that are on his staff, because they were better with Joe Flacco. And I don't mean a little bit better. They were significantly better a year ago when Flacco was the fifth starting quarterback they went to. And all of a sudden, it's like they stumbled upon something. And now they're back with Deshaun Watson, and they are awful. Because he's awful, and they got no choice but to have him on their team because he's getting paid so much money. That might go down as one of the worst deals / contracts in the history of the NFL.
Alienated the fan base. It saddled the salary cap for the team, and it paralyzed the franchise moving forward. They can't make any moves.
They may have to fire their coach. Because
he's the coach of the year right now.
That's my point.
He's the reigning coach of the year.
That's what I'm saying. They found a good coach who won with five different players, including the guy that they settled on who was good. And now look at him.
And if I heard you correctly, you said that you feel sorry for Tommy Rees because he is a member of the Browns coaching staff that you referenced, and I think you did that with intent.
That's exactly who I was thinking of.
Tommy Rees, the tight ends coach for the Cleveland Browns, joined that staff after leaving Alabama when Nick Saban left for Kalen DeBoer, whose things are going swimmingly for him down there, right?
I don't know what's going on with him. He's only lost the one game.
Well,
just
last
saying.
Week felt like a loss.
It did feel like
a loss.
It was
a loss of credibility.
That is a fair comment. But Joe's been all over that, so we'll talk to Joe on Friday, Joe Fortenbaugh. But I don't know what is going on with Bama. It doesn't look good. It looked great when they beat Georgia. You thought, wow, he's done it. This is the breakthrough. This is the one thing that Nick Saban wanted to see. Is to his replacement.
Got to give him some time. I think you got to give him some time with getting his own players and things in place. It's impossibly difficult to follow a legend. It has to be, even a guy as accomplished as DeBoer has been coming from the program he's coming from, replacing Nick Saban, wow, tough job.
No, I mean, an impossible
especially job. When he's publicly criticizing you.
When he's there on campus.
He's on campus.
Yeah.
Still got an office, right?
What's his wife's name? What's Nick Saban's wife? You know, they call her Miss whatever. I can't think of her name.
She's the real boss.
She's the real boss, but she was back on campus. It's just the idea that you have like the first family of football
Miss
ahead
Terry?
Of you. Miss Terry.
Yeah, Miss Terry.
Miss Terry.
Yeah.
It's just so funny because it's
well,
like
it's no
it's
mystery
such a Southern
who's
thing.
In charge there still.
Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely is Nick Saban. Big week in college football, Georgia and Texas. That's the big game. That's the big one nationally. I think when you look at how that's going to affect the AP poll. Locally, we got a big game, Illinois-Michigan. We're going to talk to Brett Bielema tomorrow.
Good.
And Northwestern and Wisconsin.
Bielema, 8 o'clock.
Bielema, 8 o'clock tomorrow.
Yeah. And Georgia-Texas on the score Saturday beginning at 6.
Wow.
So
prime
running around
time.
Got honeydews or date night, you can throw that on the Odyssey app.
I don't know how to feel. There are moments when I feel like Texas is the best team in college football, bar none. And then there are moments when I feel like they're not going to get it done. It's just weird.
Well, I watched them the other day.
Really good.
Quinn Ewers, the quarterback, coming back from the oblique injury.
Yeah.
I was waiting for them to turn to Arch Manning, perhaps, and maybe they will.
Sometimes sometimes it's not the easiest thing to come back from an injury.
No.
He wasn't as good as he had
he
been.
He was not as good as he has been. But we'll see how it affects him this week. This weekend, big moment for Illinois-Michigan because that could be, if
both
Illinois
teams.
Can beat Michigan, even though it's not the Michigan team we're used to seeing, huge moment for Brett Bielema's program.
No question about
it. Great opportunity.
And they've had a really good year. You got to like what they're doing. Although, I mean, maybe they should have had a easier time. Were they not a almost 3-touchdown favorite over Purdue when it came down to
that game got away from them. Let's face it. I mean, they were up 27-3 at halftime. Purdue scored 46 points in the second half and lost.
Yeah.
Imagine that. That'd be a rough week of practice.
All right. We got a lot to get to, and we're going to do that next.
Want to talk Bulls when we come back?
I think we've got to get to that as much as anything, just the idea.
Lonzo Ball tonight.
Lonzo Ball back in action. First of all, their whole team's back in action since they didn't play anyone but Josh Giddey. But it'll be really interesting to see Lonzo Ball. I think we're all kind of there. I don't want to act like it's only just the curiosity factor, but a lot of it is the curiosity factor. And we'll discuss it next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
So, give us an update, plans for the week, what's going on, like anything, man. Like, what's up?
I'm sitting the first two preseason games.
Okay.
Expecting to play the last two, maybe two of the last three, one of those.
Okay.
In there, but everything's going along. Feeling good, knees feeling good. Yeah, man, just looking forward to the future, really.
I saw an interview where you said you felt the best that you have in a long time out there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's getting better, you know, each day, honestly. Just being out there, getting comfortable again on the court, moving around, trusting the movements, all the work that I put in, and just seeing it come to life.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of Lonzo Ball. He was on the What an Experience podcast talking about his return to play. That will occur tonight. right here on the Score, Lonzo Ball will be making his 2024 debut 2.5 years after he last played a game in the NBA. And you know, David, they were going to have him play earlier in the week, but they canceled that because he had a little issue at practice. Everything's now back on track, and he is hoping to play the final two preseason games. I don't know what to expect. Well, I am fascinated by it, and as I told you, I hate to say that it's just sort of this curiosity, but at this point, it's just the idea of seeing him back.
It is curiosity. It's been more than 1,000 days since we've seen him on the basketball court in a Bulls uniform.
Wow.
So it's been a long wait, an arduous journey. Let's be clear about what he's coming back from and what he's had done to his knee. He had a meniscus transplant from a donor, along with a bone allograft, which is a replacement bone from another person. This really has never been done in the NBA.
Like a cadaver? Is that what? That's the idea?
Yes.
Holy
and
God.
So I think the way I understand it is that this is making medical history when he walks onto the court.
There's a hockey player going through the same thing, right?
In Colorado for the Avalanche.
Someone else is coming back who had a similar type of surgery.
Yeah. And, eventually, as this proceeds, I'd love to get the perspective of a Dr. Brian Cole at some point, because he's definitely involved in all of both the situations we just referenced, and you want to see where this is headed. I mean, everyone's hoping for the best. Very curious about how much mobility he'll have on the court. We don't want to make light of anything, but you do wonder about his jumping ability. You do wonder about how high he can jump. At situations, if he has a breakaway, is it a layup or a dunk? Can he dunk? Listen, we saw him on the video on Instagram.
If he has a breakaway, I would say a layup, but do like a reverse so you're using the rim in case someone comes behind you to block it. I'm just saying.
That's what you would tell your friend at the Y to do if you ever have a breakaway in an NBA game, not Lonzo Ball.
Path
so,
of least resistance.
I think what his presence represents is more than just how he fits in the rotation. This is a triumph of his own will. And I think that...
What if he can jump higher?
No.
What if...
He's not bionic.
Let's just say. Stay with me.
Okay.
What if it's like that movie with Rookie of the Year, the little kid that, you know, bang, there's like a little noise that's made and all of a sudden he's throwing 100 miles an hour? What do you think?
I don't think so. Lonzo. I think it'd be fascinating. It sounds like it'd be a movie, a premise for a movie, like Space Jam Part 3, something
exactly.
like that.
Yeah.
I don't know what to expect. I don't know if he fits into the rotation. The Bulls have a team full of depth pieces that are all vying for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Who's going to be in Billy Donovan's rotation? How will he mix and match players? Who's going to be on the final roster?
Well, I would imagine since everybody got a day off at Milwaukee, that we're going to see their starting lineup.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
At home?
Oh, I think so. And I think maybe, I don't know this, but maybe Josh Giddey is kind of playing less and that allows Lonzo to start. I don't know.
Well,
would you start him?
No.
Okay.
No, I would bring him off the bench, get him used to whatever role he envisions playing in an ideal situation. And ideally, these are big ifs. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves. But ideally, I think in his mind, when he plays this out, probably best case scenario is that Lonzo Ball is running a second offense for the Bulls at times.
But like taking a set shot.
Okay, I'm telling you, I'm trying to be serious here.
I'm sorry.
I'm trying to idealize the situation. And in the best case scenario, he's a 12 to 14 minute a game guy.
I'm kind of saying, like, don't overdo it. I mean,
yeah,
that
I do
like,
too.
It's his first game back. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're feeling okay. Don't do anything. You just get a little sweat going, run around a little bit, maybe jack up a shot or two, but don't feel like you got to run.
Don't
the
be a
team.
Hero.
It's preseason game.
I'll be surprised if we come in here tomorrow and he has played more than 10 minutes.
Okay.
I think that's probably a good target for the Bulls and Lonzo Ball getting back on the court, get acclimated, get into the tempo, get readjusted and recalibrated if you can in a preseason setting, and see how it feels and see how you wake up tomorrow. That will be another test and how this rest and recovery goes.
Is there any doubt in your mind that he's going to play the last two preseason games?
Yes, of course.
I think he's playing this one.
Yeah, I don't know about the next
one.
That's
what I'm saying.
I think you always are going to have doubt in your mind when you have somebody coming back from a medical procedure that's never been done on an NBA player before.
Yeah.
So this is all new ground that they're trying to cover.
Guy was a really fun player to watch when he was, you know, in his prime at his best. And it's great that he can play in the NBA again. I don't know. I mean, I don't think the future is promised to no man, but I think when you're talking about a guy with the severity of the injury that he had and what they're trying to make medical history, you don't know. You don't know how long it's going
to
work.
Are there some fans out there, I hate to ask this, but I think it's reality, that will see the presence of Lonzo Ball on the court and just be reminded of all that represents in terms of
what should have been?
What should have been. Because, again, those magical, glorious 35 games that he played in at the beginning of that season,
the Bulls were great. They
looked like a top four seed.
They did.
They looked like a top four team in the East. And when he was clicking and everybody else was functioning at a high level, it was easy to see what the Bulls envisioned when they signed him. And then he became kind of a symbol of what they couldn't do. And that, to me, when he gets back on the floor, you're definitely into the moment. And then I just wonder, boy, if anybody's going to be like deflated by that. And I have hopes that maybe are unrealistic as well. Like, okay, well, Lonzo Ball's back. Now he can do what he did before. And I don't think he's ever going to be able to be that player again.
No, and they have talked about, and he has talked about, using his basketball IQ to help him to, outthink other people, anticipate things that he knows are going to happen, understand who's open and who isn't. And, I gotta wonder, David, is this something that the Bulls are doing because he's under contract and should they have moved on? Or have they already moved on kind of mentally? They went out and they got Josh Giddey because he reminded them of some of the things that Ball could do when they drafted Dalen Terry because he reminded them that he could do some of these things. And
moved on from a basketball perspective.
Yes.
I think they feel like, I don't want to say they owe this to him, but they do want to see this through responsibly. And I think that is to be commended, but I do think from a basketball perspective, Josh Giddey's presence, Dalen Terry's drafting, all those things represent them having to move on. I think Josh Giddey, the offense will run through him. Don't you think he's going to be the point guard of this team?
Yes.
I think everything will run through Zach and Kobe White.
Yes,
but Josh Giddey will be the chief distributor of the basketball and keep things going because he does see the floor exceptionally well and he is a great passer.
312-644-6767. Keith is in Shorewood. Hey, Keith.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Morning.
So here's my thought, and this is coming from a lot of years of experience at the college level and so on, but I don't know of any athlete that I've ever been exposed to, and you guys have obviously been exposed to a whole bunch of athletes in your careers that won't go full bore to show that they're back.
Yeah.
And again, understanding that we don't know what he is, but I know that athletes in their mind, even when they're getting close to retirement, still think they've got it, right? And I think in this situation with him coming back and having to prove to the world, it's the surgery that nobody's ever seen before. But I think he's going to go full bore to say, look, this is who I am now. I don't see anything. There's no athlete that I know that won't do that. So I just caution to say, I don't know what kind of minutes he's going to get, but I would say that he's going to give everything he's got in those minutes just to show that, hey, this worked, and want to prove it to himself and to prove to the fans and us.
Keith, so. I think that's a good phone call. Thank you. You're right. I guess what we're saying, Molly, maybe in response to that, we just don't know what that means or what that will look like. His full 100% effort won't resemble what it used to resemble, or what it used to. He won't get the same results. He's older. His legs and his knees are different now, and he's going to show the rust initially, but nobody would ever question his effort, and he's going to want to show that this is going to be a successful return and recovery. Nobody comes back from what he has come back from without that kind of just determination and sheer will. That's going to be something that is going to be obvious.
You know, I just wonder, I like, it's, this is the problem. He hasn't played in 2.5 years. So when I think of like the great injury comebacks, guys that came back from horrible injuries and what, you know, it's kind of the, I think of like Peyton Manning had multiple neck surgeries and then came back, not in Indy, but came back in Denver and won a Super Bowl. I don't know that he was the entity that he once was when he won a Super Bowl in Denver. And I don't know if there's any way that you can do that on a basketball floor where you have to have all the great athleticism at all times. You know what I mean by that? I like Tiger came
quarterbacks
back.
Can protect themselves or limit their, I know what you're saying. It's a different
it's
dynamic.
Totally different.
Because when you're a point guard in an NBA game, you have to do everything all the time.
You're exposed.
Yeah. You can't really limit your, I'm only going to play offense on this possession.
Yes.
I'm only going to roll right if you're Peyton Manning, or I'm not going to be able to do certain things in the pocket or out of the pocket.
But what's the best injury comeback you've ever seen?
Wow.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a great question.
Because this is sort of that.
That's a great question.
And there are so many that didn't work. I mean, Adrian Peterson came back in less than a year from an ACL.
That would probably be at the top of the list. He was a successful running back, but certainly not at the level that he left. But he did come back from an ACL in less than a year, and he set the standard for people wanting to meet after that, and kind of an unrealistic one by coming back so fast.
But I'm trying to think of, you know, I guess Paul George had that horrible injury where his leg broke.
I'll tell you one that comes to mind, and it's not even apples to apples, but when you ask about the most remarkable comeback in sports for an athlete, DeMar Hamlin.
Yeah.
DeMar Hamlin is a starting NFL safety, and he died on the field.
Heart stopped. Yeah.
That's a crazy comeback.
Right.
And so I have to think about it. That's a really good topic.
Yeah. But that wasn't like.
I know.
You know, I know.
It's not something that's functioning. Like, your capacity is limited when he comes back. No, his body is still whole.
Like, I hate to say this, and I don't think this is apples to apples either, but like D Rose was like MVP. Guy could jump out of a gym. Guy could do anything physically. Hurts his knee and never really comes back. Like comes back and ends up having a long career, but he's never the entity he
was. He's not the same guy. He lasted 10 years. Yes. But you're right about that. Was never the same guy. Lonzo Ball will never be the same player. Can he last on an NBA roster for the next 5 to 7 to 10 years? He's still a pretty young man.
He's a young man. 312-644-6767. We got Chris Chelios next. It's Mully and Hahn, The Score.
Chris Chelios.
Up the boards to Chelios with room. He shoots. Score!
BetMGM ambassador, the king of sportsbooks.
Nice play by Chris Chelios.
Hockey Hall of Famer.
Chris Chelios is not human. I'm convinced of it. Not only will he go in the Hall of Fame, I think he should go in the Smithsonian.
Blackhawks legend.
Chelios will add defense, but he'll also add offense to the Hawks.
Steve Smith ahead to Murphy. Nichols at the line. Chelios moving in. Chelios scores! Chris Chelios has won it for Chicago.
Three-time Stanley Cup champion.
What a competitor Chris Chelios has been over the years. Been a winner every place he's ever been.
Chris Chelios with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Chris Chelios, MGM Ambassador. Bet MGM Ambassador. Bet MGM, the king of sportsbook. And Chris joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Chris, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing well.
You know, I'm about ready for the Hawks to get home. I'm glad they're coming home. It's just been too many later games, and I need them at a reasonable hour given my schedule.
Yeah, those are tough ones. We talked about that last week, and it was tough to play those, too, especially if you didn't get out there a couple days before. So, yeah, that's four games on the road to start the season. That's not what you wish for, but, you know, they played some great hockey. Other than that first period of the first game, they've looked pretty good.
You know, they did. On Friday night, they blew a lead late. They get a point in overtime. They surprised the Oilers on home ice on Saturday. They didn't have it last night. Calgary's off to a very good start. But, Chelly, when you watch the Hawks through four games, tough road trip to start the season, what stood out the most about why they are competitive?
I mean, I'm watching, we talked about Connor, the first game, the turnovers and stuff, and just making those plays that you need to, just the little things. And when he's doing it, then everybody else is going to be doing it. And I think I got to give a lot of credit to Foligno. He's playing on this line with him. He must be talking to him. He just made way better decisions, and it's like a trickle effect, right? Tara Vinan's doing the same thing. I'm sure the message is coming from the coaching staff, Luke Richardson. But it's just those little things, and they're, you know, the 50-50 chances, they're, you know, they're getting pucks deep and getting it behind the other team's defensemen, and the way less turnovers, like we talked about last week. And that's been the key. They're playing smart.
I'm curious, what's going on with Tyler Bertuzzi? Does he need to kind of get his game going a little bit just to feel better about himself and to kind of restart his season a little?
You know, he's a scrappy kid. I had the chance to coach him in Grand Rapids and then in Detroit. I watched him play there. And he's really a guy who just, he goes in that. His size, the injuries have been an issue over the course of his career. But like I said, I think he'll come around. He competes hard. It's hopefully just a slow start. And he's a guy that drives the net and gets the puck to the net and plays like textbook hockey. And I'm sure he's going to pick it up soon.
So, Chelly, Saturday night, Wyatt Kaiser takes Connor McDavid into the boards. It frustrates McDavid to the point where he responds and gets a penalty. That was something I didn't expect out of Wyatt Kaiser. This defense has been more structured. You see guys coming through. I think Seth Jones is off to a pretty good start. What do you see defensively that they're doing better so far?
Yeah, I think the forwards are helping him out. But the first guy I'd like to give credit to, Jones, is off to a really good start. He's keeping things simple. He's just getting pucks on the net. He talked about it in his interview yesterday. But all the guys, I think Murphy, again, he's come off to a good start. He's come out of the gate and played real aggressive. Vlasic, you know, there's no question he's going to be a stud in the next for the remainder of his career. He's just a big presence and skate, moves the puck well. So, again, they're not spending as much time in their end. And that helps a ton. And nobody, it doesn't matter who you are, if you're playing in your own end all night, you're going to get tired and make mistakes. And they're just playing a real good, solid hockey, and it's helping the D out a lot.
I'm curious, obviously, we heard from Danny Wirtz today in the Sun-Times talking about how the revenue streams have been impacted already by the Chicago Sports Network's inability to get a carriage deal done, especially with Comcast. And I got friends that are disappointed by it. Hopefully that gets resolved, but it doesn't look like it's going to be resolved before the home opener on Thursday. Chris, do you have all the cable service you need? Have you had to go out to see any games, and how are you handling it, or how should sports fans feel about it?
Well, I'm lucky. I got DirecTV out here, and for some reason, I was able to get the pregame, you know, with Pat and Tony and my daughter. But my 90-year-old mom was pissed yesterday because she couldn't get the pregame. So it is tough, and it's somewhat like with the NFL, like different networks every, you know, Monday and Sunday and Thursday. So it'll get all ironed out, and people will figure out, you know, how to get it. It's eventually, when the Hawks start playing better, no one's going to complain, and if they become competitive in a playoff team, that's usually the way it works.
You got to get your mom an antenna, Chelly, so she can watch Kaylee. She's doing a great job.
I'm out of town. I would have drove there in 20 minutes. I'd have had that. Yeah.
What do you think of the Bears over the weekend? They're off to a very good start. They've got the bye this week, but 4-2 is kind of where you want to be.
Oh yeah. I mean, unfortunately, Minnesota, Green Bay, Detroit—they're all going to be good this year. It looks like so far. But I mean, they're taking care of those teams. They should be. You don't put yourself in a better class, but at least they're eliminating those lower teams those last 2 weeks. And every week again, Williams, and he's gotten better every week. And Komet, what a game he had!
Yeah.
They're using a lot more. Like I said, it's just common sense. You got a tight end that's a foot bigger than everybody else, and this kid gets open all the time. I'd go to him the majority of the time, and then open things up for everybody else. But they look great. It looked like it was at Soldier's Field. The fans were all back in the Bears. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was great stuff. Thanks so much, Chris. Great catching up with you.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, you guys. Take care.
You too.
That is Chris Chelios, BetMGM ambassador.
He's right about the Hawks. The Hawks have been competitive. They're off to a very good start. 1-2-1, not where you want to be record-wise maybe, but they are in these games, and they're playing better brand of hockey.
All right, we'll be right back. Mully and Haw on the score.